Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Bielo, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. One of the keys to a happy life is understanding and accepting who you are and learning to create the life you love based on that understanding. As we've talked about many times on this podcast series, introverts have an enormous capacity for success when they recognize and strengthen their best traits. My guest today is a perfect example of what can manifest when an introverted heart and mind is driven by courage, love, and creativity. Dr. Susan Bialy is an award-winning medical doctor, media wellness expert, author, speaker, life coach, and professional flamenco dancer. She lives to help you discover yourself, create vibrant health, and design a life that you absolutely love. Formerly a sick, depressed emergency medicine resident, Dr. Bialy took back her own life and health by learning how to balance her life, listen to her body, and create a life truly worth living. Today, her greatest passion is helping free others to do the same. Frequently featured in media across North America, Dr. Bialy blogs for Psychology Today and has appeared on Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC, Global TV, and CTV. She consults for Cosmopolitan magazine and has appeared in Self, Fitness, Hello, Chatelaine, and the Chicago Tribune. She is also the Embrace Life Coach for Reader's Digest Best Health Magazine's Vichy Best Health Challenge. Her best-selling new book, Live a Life You Love, 7 Steps to a Healthier, Happier, More Passionate You, was published in March 2010. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the podcast. I am really glad to have you here. I have been looking forward to this for months, so thank you for taking time out to be with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Beth. I'm so excited to finally be here, too.
So I want to kick off kind of maybe rewinding a little bit into your past life, because you were and are a doctor. And so I'm curious, what kind of doctor are you? And how is it that you ended up also becoming a life coach and a writer and a speaker? And especially, I know people will be curious about the professional flamenco dancer.
Well, it's a long story. I'll try to edit it down for you. I'm a medical doctor. I'm a GP, and I also have a degree in dietetics. That was my initial training prior to medical school, and I was very fortunate in that I picked completely the wrong specialty for myself, pretty much because I had no idea of who I was, and this is why this has been such an amazing journey that I've wanted to share with so many people. And I became so depressed that I basically could not function as an emergency medicine resident anymore. That's the specialty I had chosen, and was told to take a stress leave. And it was in that stress leave when I was just so desperate to figure out how I could possibly create a life that would be worth living for me. I discovered and actually remembered that when I was a little girl, more than anything, I wanted to be a solid gold dancer. And I also, as I was writing in my journal there in Cuba, that's where I went on my stress leave, I'm Canadian. And as I was writing in my journal, it came up that I wanted to be a writer. And I had always avoided writing in school and university because for somebody who prided themselves on a perfect GPA, something like writing might actually affect that. I mean, I was so lost in my life. And so here I was in Cuba on this stress leave, out of nowhere, realizing that I wanted to be a dancer and a writer, and then within a few years actually ended up living in Mexico, living my dream life with my own flamenco dance company, writing my book, coaching tons of people on how I had created this life that was so much healthier and happier, and really all of that was completely unplanned initially anyway and came out of that really, really low, incredibly depressed place that I had been in.
It makes it seem like, you know, okay, so you discovered this and then you just did it. What's, you know, was there, were there any moments of, I'm not even sure the word I'm looking for, but, you know, kind of hesitation or, and if so, how did you move through that?
Well, as I said, the whole thing wasn't really planned, at least not from the beginning. For me, it was like an experiment with life, which I had never, ever done before. It was getting in touch with who I really was, which I had not done for my whole life since I was about 7 or 8, and starting to ask myself, what would I really love to do? And then trying it, and trying it in very small doses. Like when I was in Cuba and I got the realization that I wanted to be a dancer, that happened while I was watching some dancers dancing salsa on stage, I simply went home and tracked down a salsa teacher and signed up for a salsa dance class. So that was the very first thing. And that ultimately led to me studying flamenco and ultimately led to me coming up with this dream that I wanted to live in a tropical country and just dance all the time. Mm-hmm. And of course, as things got bigger and more unique, the more daunting and scary things got, because I had less support from other people and even a lot of, are you crazy?
Sure, other people. Sure. Yeah. Well, I love the way you framed that with experiment with life. Like it was, and there's something about that is very liberating to me, because when we think of experimentation, we know there's going to be success and we know there's going to be do-overs and things that don't go so well, that it's all part of the journey. And that's just a lovely framing that I'm hearing you have.
Yes, and it really works so perfectly, because you start where you're comfortable. And that's why I encourage people to start from what they feel that they can imagine themselves safely doing, like signing up for a dance class. And then when I saw the results of that, like I eventually ended up on this performance dance team, and I was wearing clothes that looked a lot like the solid gold dancers outfits, and I was on stage and even getting paid a little money here and there. I was like, wow, that really worked out well. What else can I try next? Mm-hmm. I want to dream something bigger. And so every little experience like that built upon itself until I had the courage to completely move to another country and just go completely wild.
Amazing. Amazing. And with that, I love that, you know, trying things in small doses, because I think that's where hesitation can come in, because we see that big end thing and say, oh, can I do that? But I can certainly call it and find a salsa teacher and sign up for lessons. And
absolutely. And that can even be enough for so many people. Just the feeling of having there be something out there that they want to get to, but they feel so paralyzed and stuck. I mean, even just doing something that moves you forward. Life is so incredible in the way that it'll meet you and deliver a thousandfold back, that our job is actually really not that much. It just feels like it's a huge thing when you're stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, when I discovered you, in your current incarnation as a coach and a dancer and whatnot. And I first found you when I read a blog post about being an introvert as well as being a highly sensitive person, or an HSP. So I'd like to spend a few minutes kind of diving into that, because both of those things might seem a little contrary to these adventures that you've had. I'm like, you know, like how do those two things balance? And so I want to start with HSP and ask, you know, what does that mean? And if I'm, you know, somebody listening, how can I tell if I am one?
Well, before I define it, I wanted to just make a quick comment about what you said regarding people being surprised. And I think that is such an important point, because when someone looks at my life or even other people's lives who've done what they may consider to be great things, they'll often make all kinds of assumptions about that person. Like I come across, if I'm speaking on stage or speaking to you today, or even when I write, I come across as really incredibly confident and boisterous and big personality, and I'm a dancer. And actually, I'm an extremely private, shy, introverted person, and it's quite well known that a lot of artists, even rock stars, are very, very private and reclusive and even kind of shrinking violets in their real selves. So this can be very freeing to people who look at people doing things that they want to do, especially if you're an HSP introvert, and thinking that, well, they're so different from me, because we might actually be a lot more similar than you think.
Yeah.
And regarding what an HSP is, I'm not sure if it was Elaine Aaron. She's a psychologist who's probably best known for the work in this area. I'm not sure if she actually discovered it or she just did the majority of work in this area. It's really a trait. It's not a disorder. Somebody once asked me, shouldn't this be in the DSM-4 of psychiatric diagnosis? And no, this is not considered to be a problem, even though it can be a problem when other people don't get it. But it's more of a personality trait. And the official term for it is sensory processing sensitivity, which means that people who are highly sensitive, or HSP, are exquisitely sensitive to their environment. And our brains are actually thought to be different. We have a different way of processing the environment than a more neurologically typical or neurotypical mm-hmm. person.
What would be some things that you would respond more sensitively to?
Oh, what would we not respond more sensitively to? Everything. Smells, sounds is huge. Any kind of stimulation, like too much of anything, too many people, too much noise, too much wind, too strong smells, even too intense moods. Like we pick up on everything, and it's like it's all amplified, and people who are more neurologically, I don't want to say normal, but typical is a better word. People who are more neurologically typical might wonder what's wrong with us when we want to go run and hide and cover our heads in a room, because they're having the same experience, but their brains are experiencing it totally differently.
Yeah. And in your experience, have you known of people that have varying degrees of HSP? Is it possible to be a slightly HSP or an extreme HSP and everywhere in between?
I think so. I think that's human nature, where there's a spectrum or a continuum. And I think a lot of it also has to do, as a physician, with your health practices, your lifestyle practices, and how well you actually support yourself in this. Because as an HSP, if you're, this is my opinion, if you're sleep deprived, if you haven't been exercising, if you haven't been eating well, if you've been skipping meals, all those kinds of things really put your nervous system on edge. Or if you've been eating really bad foods, or even maybe drinking a lot of alcohol, I think you'll be more sensitive. So perhaps people who seem to be super sensitive, if they take better care of themselves and are more deliberate in how they live life, they actually might be a lot less sensitive than they started out.
Sure. Well, it strikes me that just like with introversion, there's an awareness and a way of taking care of yourself that can make that particular trait that you have either healthy or unhealthy, or, you know, it can show up in healthy or unhealthy ways.
Yes.
And I know ever since, I believe it was your blog post that first introduced me to exactly what HSP was. And I thought, oh, that explains a lot. And I think that's why I was asking that question about, you know, degrees, because I don't feel like I'm at that, you know, extreme end, but I definitely have some pretty pronounced sensitivities. And so knowing that now, I can tell my, you know, I know why I'm responding to different things, and I can communicate more clearly to my husband. And he knows now, okay, when you're putting the dishes on the counter, set them down gently, because it might sound like it's just setting it down to you. To me, it sounds like, a rifle just shot off.
Right.
And so it's made us, you know, I do less jumping, and he doesn't shoot me any looks of annoyance. So.
Well, I think like anything that helps people understand it, especially if it makes it more objective. Mm-hmm. It makes it less about you.
Yes.
Like if you don't have a name for this, and the people around you don't know what it is, they just think you're weird or irritable or just kind of mean and snappish. Like they just don't get it. But then if you now have a name for this, and there are actually tons of people, they estimate 15 to 20% of the population has some level of this trait that's significant. If you now have a name for it, it's now no longer that Beth gets irritated. It's like highly sensitive brains get really irritated by this, and it's no longer personal.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. So to that end, you know, since you have found this, you know, healthy relationship, it sounds like, with being an HSP introvert, what have you found to be most challenging about having these traits?
Well, the relationship aspect, which we already talked about, in that people can find it very hard to relate to when you don't want to do things or have learned not to do things that they might find really normal. Like one of the things that I found, or I wrote about in that blog post that you referred to, was the fact that I've learned just not to share hotel rooms with people. Mm-hmm. And it's actually something that kind of saddens me, because it's not like I don't like being around people. Even though I am highly introverted, I love people in certain doses, and especially people that I find really, really interesting. And so I would love to hang out with a group of girls in a hotel room in pajamas and laugh and share stories. But after that, I would want to go down the hall to the very end and find my quiet room that's dimly lit and do my quiet little face washing routine and then go to bed with quietly with a good book. I would need to get out of there. And somebody who is more extroverted and more neurologically typical would get to have all that fun with all the girls together, but then also be able to crash on the floor and on a few on a bed and giggling through the night and get up in the morning and all brushing your teeth together, by which point I would be acting really weird and maybe grumpy and maybe even insult somebody because I get so stressed by it. So so I think that's really hard. I think it's hard that to take care of ourselves, we'll often have to remove ourselves from situations that we would even maybe like to be able to enjoy like normal people.
Yeah.
Neurologically normal people, but it's just the way it is. I know that if I want to go on a trip with friends and have a great time with them and not have any kind of a meltdown, I need to have built in advance the ways that I'm going to get my quiet time, my alone time, and my sensory decompression time.
Have you found any particular ways of sharing your needs with other people that makes it a little bit easier for them to understand?
Well, having written a blog post on it,
that does help. That does help.
Yes. Well, all of my 900 friends on Facebook are aware of this now. And it was quite funny because I did go on a short getaway with a friend, and I actually did share a hotel room with her because we stayed at this really, really expensive luxury resort, and it wasn't really that possible for me to get my own room. But she had read the blog, and she even admitted to being a little HSP herself, so we made little HSP jokes, and it actually went really, really well for a couple of nights. That was all it was, and so advertise it, write about it, talk about it, share a book with somebody.
And so you've just shared, you know, a little bit about my next question with how have you been successful in navigating that particular challenge, you know, as you've talked about relationships. Is there anything else that you've found to be effective in terms of just taking care of yourself?
Well, probably the most helpful thing for being HSP is I've got it in my hands right now because it's never, or they are never, more than a few feet away from me. I'm going to sound crazy when I say this, but the lovely thing about HSP I've found is that when I say things that I think would sound crazy, people go, "That's me!"
Isn't that satisfying?
It's so satisfying. It's so satisfying. So I've got here in my hand my heavy-duty machinery headphones, and these are my life savers. I bring them when I'm on the plane. A similar thing, for example, would be the fancier noise-canceling headphones. And so if I'm packed on a plane surrounded by noisy families, I'll just pop them on my ears, and it just brings the noise volume so down. And I found that as an HSP, you can feel really vulnerable and anxious about environments that you're in, because so often we can't control them. We can make choices to our best ability to control our environments, but there will be times when you just can't. And so when I need quiet, whether it's in my bedroom or on a plane or in a hotel room or even in a library if I'm studying at university when I was in school, I would just pop these on and I don't have to run around shushing everybody. and it gives me such peace of mind. So that's something I've found has helped so much.
And I know some people, you know, my husband loves to carry earplugs with him all the time. Just anything that at a moment's notice, you can take control of your environment a little bit more.
Exactly.
So turning to the introvert part of the equation, what's the single most important thing an introvert, and maybe even especially an HSP introvert, can do for their health and their quality of life?
I think the single most important thing is understanding it. So read about it, educate yourself about it, and find out what aspects of being an introvert or an HSP introvert, or even just HSP, because 30% of HSPs are actually extroverts. finding out what are the key elements of it that seem to be most true for you, and then structure your life to really, really honor and take care of that part of you. Like for me, I know that every single day I need time away from people and real quiet time. And that if I get that time every day, or that I give myself that time whenever I start to feel overwhelmed, I found that I have developed such an incredible respect and understanding and deep compassion within myself for myself and my need to be this way. And so being very in tune to when you start to get pushed over that edge of just too much stimulation, too many people, too little alone time, and right when you start to feel that, to just do something about it rather than letting it get to the point where it becomes really, really difficult and even may have consequences in your relationships.
Well, you said a word that I think is extraordinarily important, and that is compassion. I find when I work with clients, often when they're getting into that place of a lot of self-criticism and self-judgment, if we're able to shift it a little bit to that understanding and compassion, it softens the edges of everything and allows us to get some new perspective and kind of make friends with that part of ourselves and say, okay, so if this was someone else, wouldn't I be compassionate with them? Why am I being so hard on myself or denying myself what I need because of that judgment or criticism?
Absolutely. And it is difficult because we are the minority. HSPs being 50-20% and introverts also being significantly less than the majority of the population. And so we're living in a world that is largely inhabited by people and designed for people who are not like us. Mm-hmm. So we need to have compassion for that, about how difficult it can be, and then also how much better life can be when we do take care of ourselves like we deserve to.
I want to shift gears for a moment, and that's actually stemming out of that in terms of, how we're defining things and how we bring things like compassion into our lives. And one of the favorite things that I love to do with my coaching clients, and maybe you have this too, is to help them reveal their core values and define them for themselves. So they might say, success is important to me, or prosperity, or family, but they haven't defined it. And I found that personally defining success is one that often gives clients their biggest aha moment, where just like, oh, wait a minute, I can define it for myself. And so for you as an award-winning physician, you were already successful by traditional standards. But like you said before, unfortunately, you discovered that you were depressed and rather miserable. So how, stepping away from that traditional definition of success, how do you define success for yourself today?
Well, you're absolutely right that in my initial stage in my training as a physician, I'm still a physician, I practice very part-time, but when I was in my whole life is about being a doctor phase. And I really was very successful. I was among the top students in my medical class. At one point, I was actually the top student in my medical class and got into one of the most prestigious residencies in the country. And so to look at that from a societal perspective, I was just on top of the mountain. But what made me not successful in terms of how I define success now, which is very different, is that I was not at all excited about my life. Not excited about anything that I was doing. Life was something that had to be gotten through. And so today, my life, I look at it from two perspectives. I look at it on a daily basis. Like, what is my life like right now? And also, what's going to come in the future? And for me, success now is that there are significant aspects of my life today that make me really excited about my life as it is right now. But then I also am always looking forward to and moving towards some wonderful kinds of experiences that I hope to create myself for myself in the future. So it has this wonderful kind of tension there. Well, I love it now, but I'm excited about what I'm going to do. And that just also gives an excitement to my everyday life as well.
I love that you said that there's a tension there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tension is not necessarily a word we usually associate with success. Like I, you know, I think of ease, but I love that there's that tension is actually something that is, I would guess that it sustains you to some degree.
Exactly. It's like we talk about eustress, right? That not all stress is bad. That in fact, if we had no stress at all, we would be so bored and totally miserable. Like human beings need a little bit of motivation, a little bit of pressure, something to do, something to conquer, something to move towards or get rid of. Like we thrive doing things. And it's about finding the right kinds of motivators and things that will, as they perhaps pressure us a little bit, that they'll actually make us create something more that we love or feel better or achieve more confidence or joy. Like it's very dynamic. And I feel that way about the tension. It's like, I love my life right now, but there's still something that's pulling me forward because I'm such an action-oriented and challenge-oriented person. Like, I really love that challenge of life so much that for me to have absolutely everything that I wanted in one moment would kind of be almost boring because I'd be like, okay, what do I do now?
I mean? We could get complacent and, you know.
Exactly. So it's not about lack. It's about the adventure of life.
It's not about saying, okay, I don't have this, and so now I have to go work and get it.
Yeah, it's not like a wah, wah, wah kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds very positively motivated. And do you do anything like vision boards or, masterminds or, you know, how do you, what's your process for being open to what's coming next or what the future is going to bring?
Well, I have done vision boards in the past. I haven't done those for a while. I actually went through kind of a sort of difficult, weird was actually the first word that came to mind because I went through, after I had my experience with my depression and the whole breakdown thing and then building almost from scratch that whole new life, I did all of that. I made vision boards and I made life lists. And then I reached a point, it was probably about 3 years ago, where I actually had pretty much lived it, almost everything that was on the list, and it was a little unsettling almost, actually.
Mm-hmm. No more tension.
Yes, exactly. What do I do now? And the thing that I find doing now, which I do a lot with my coaching clients, is I focus on the ideal day exercise, like writing out what an ideal day in your life would be from the moment that you wake up in the morning to the moment you close your eyes at night. And what would those elements be? And because I'm in many ways living that, I'm just kind of tweaking the elements a little bit, probably every few months. So I'm always just refining, going, okay, life has been so amazing to me. I've gotten that. Now, what would be even more ideal or what would be even more fulfilling? What would be even more serving to mankind, right? Like expanding it.
So, yeah, I've done that ideal day and I've done that with some clients and I find it very, there's usually something very surprising that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's
mm-hmm.
really honest about it and not saying, this is what I think is possible. But it's rather, what is your ideal? What can you dream?
Yes. And it really brings you into it. I think that's the distinction, actually, between vision boards and lists, is that with a vision board, if you're cutting out things from magazines, they're still external things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing an ideal day, you're actually seeing yourself. So it is actually a way of visualizing and really feeling it. It's really gets into the experience and give you even more clarity, I think.
So here's the challenge that I think I see, and maybe I've even experienced myself, and that is that life can be so overwhelming. Sometimes it's just enough to keep up, that even visualizing that ideal day can be challenging. So what would you advise someone who is feeling, you know, just completely overwhelmed by their life and their responsibilities, and that they're, you know, worried about the effect of the pace of their life on their health and their personal life?
So what would I advise them when they're feeling really overwhelmed?
Yeah. What would you advise them if they're feeling completely overwhelmed and they can't even get to that place where they want to be open to visualize what is my ideal day? It's like, well, I can't even figure out how I'm going to get all the laundry done and keep up with the dishes and the kids and the job.
Right. So they're too go. And so many of us are. And I actually, again, from the point of view of a physician, a very holistic physician, I would get them to stop and listen to their body, to get into their body and just ask themselves, and most people will know immediately when you ask them this, what does your body need from you right now? And it might be just to sit down. It might be a weekend off. I had a coaching client recently say that her body was actually screaming at her to turn it into a high-performance athlete, which I had never heard before. But when we that was what came out of her. She actually voiced a very specific kind of athlete. But what it was really about was that she wasn't getting any exercise. She was doing things like yoga, stuff like that, but she had all this pent-up energy. She was like a bomb, which will really make you feel overwhelmed. I mean, she was just almost shaking with all this repressed energy, and it was also repressed what she wanted to do with her life. And so to actually, in her case, get out there, get with a trainer, get running, get active, blow off some of that steam, that's when you start listening to whatever it is that your body needs you to do to stop the madness. Mm-hmm. That's usually when you also then begin to connect with yourself, which is where this exercise comes out of. Because if you're not consciously connecting with who you are and giving yourself the space to do that, you're right. You're not going to be able to very easily pull that out.
It's too much of a leap because you can't get out of the space.
But it's great.
You're in.
It still achieves a lot, though, because if you say to a person, do this exercise, and they're like, well, I have no idea. All I can think about is my to-do list. Then you need to back up and get them to the point where they will be able to do the exercise, which then serves a great purpose in itself.
Yeah. Well, as you were speaking, what came up for me was the words proactive and reactive. And often when we think about, you know, stopping and listening to our bodies, it's in reaction to something, like our bodies in some way are breaking down or yelling at us in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're inviting us to do is to take the opportunity, even before that happens, is to stop and listen so that there's a chance to be proactive about it and maybe preempt some of that grumbling that our body does.
Well, absolutely. I'm always talking about that, how first our body whispers to us, then it speaks a little louder, and then it will start screaming and sometimes knock you completely flat if you're not paying attention, which I love. Like, it's so wonderful that we seem to have this built-in fail-safe system to draw us back in, to keep us in check, to get our attention about what matters most. And that's why I encourage the people start at that place, because there's so much wisdom to be found there, and you find yourself there.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that client about feeling called to be a high performance athlete, because I've recently gotten a calling to do the couch to 5K. if you've heard of that.
No.
Oh, it's great. It's like a 9-week program where you gradually, you know, shift the ratio of walking to running.
So, oh, yes. Like interval training. I've done a bit of that. That's the only way anybody can get me to run.
Yeah, I think that's going to work for me too. But the strange thing is I'm excited about it. And I'm feeling like I think it's in reaction to some whispers. But it's also, I feel like as I'm listening to you, I'm realizing that it really is a more proactive thing. And again, you know, thinking of coaching and some of the language that we use around that, it's like, are you making these changes and are you taking care of yourself from love or fear? You know, fear that you're going to fall apart or, you know, whatever it is, or is it out of love? Like, I respect my body and I want to take care of it. And they're two very different motivations.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess without even characterizing it that way, everything that I do, it's all about love for yourself, for your body, for life, for humanity, for your gifts, your talents, and who you're wired to be, which really comes down to the HSP introvert thing. If that's who you are, then that's where that compassion comes from, that deep love and acceptance of who you are.
Yeah, and you're really living that, and that totally shines through in all of your writing and your messaging and even just in this conversation. So what a gift that you're giving to the world, and especially HSP introverts.
Well, thank you. And I want to add some beautiful paper and a gorgeous sparkly bow, hopefully, to that gift by telling people that do not think that my life is perfect all the time. It is so not. In fact, I get, especially recently, ever since I wrote my book, Live a Life You Love, it's quite funny what life will do to you when you write a book like that. And I've had so many curveballs thrown at me, which have forced me to live these principles even harder and really look at them on a deeper level and look at myself and my life and the things that I teach on a deeper level. So that's all part of life's adventure. It's not just as simple as dreaming your ideal day and then you like tiptoe dancing through the tulips until you get it. It's a little more complicated than that, but when you frame it in the context of all the amazing things that come out of the ups and the downs, it makes life so rich and fun.
It sounds like you've had a number of moments that my husband calls coach heal thyself, where we have to, you know, turn it back on ourselves because we are finding ourselves with the same challenges and doubts and demons.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I think the more that we work with people and the more that our reach grows, the more responsibility we have to deeply understand things. And it really seems like life is preparing us for that role, which is not always fun, but I certainly welcome that. And it adds so much meaning to those experiences when you know you can turn right around and use them to help others.
So you mentioned your book, and I have first a general book question, and then I want you to tell us just a little bit more about your book. But I have a question that I ask all of my guests. And that is, if you were granted a year's vacation on lovely Introvert Island, and maybe it could even be HSP Island, so there's no motor craft or anything allowed anywhere around it, and you only had room for 3 books in your suitcase, what would you take with you and why?
Well, I'm going to cheat a little bit, I think. I don't know if this is cheating, but it's my suitcase, so I can bring what I want.
It could be a really big suitcase.
Oh, don't tempt me. So there are no weight limitations on this flight?
Oh, that's right. There's no extra baggage fees. Or...
Fabulous. But I'm still only allowed 3 books. So what would I bring? One book, absolutely, which isn't... I think it qualifies as a book because mine tend to be very book-like in that they're hardcover and very thick. And that would be a journal. I have to write. I have to be able to process that way. Just everything, whether it's prayers or wish lists or dreams or working through problems, everything goes through my journal. So I would absolutely need that more than anything. The second, which is kind of cheating, I guess, because it's 3 books in one, would be Julia Cameron's Complete Artist Way collection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all 3 books, and I've actually only done The Artist's Way. Mm-hmm. I've done The Artist's Way twice, and it just completely changed my life. It really helped me have the life I have now, which is why I'm so evangelistic about helping people have lives that they dream of and giving them the tools to do so. So the Complete Artist's Way has The Artist's Way, it has Walking in This World and Finding Water, which are her 3 books that are really programs. Like, they give you all kinds of information that is incredibly thought-provoking and soul-stirring, but then they're full of exercises. Like, I mean, this could keep me playing for longer than a year, I'm sure.
Right.
So there's that. And then I would bring the Bible, because I'm Christian, and that has just so much richness for me and solace. And yeah, those would be my 3 books.
Sounds like it would be a very nurturing time.
It would. I do want some people around, though. We just need some kind of really fabulous gourmet restaurant on like one far corner of the island where we can all meet, where
exactly.
There's quiet music playing. Or some really nice low-level lounge, like the kind of cool lounge.
Oh, yeah. So you mentioned your book. live the life you love. And I bet some people after listening to you are going to be curious to go pick that up if they haven't already. So how can people learn more about you and the book?
Well, they can check out my website, which is susanbiali.com. That's SusanBiali.com. And the book has its own webpage, which is livealifeyoulovebook.com. And also there on my website, I have a free special report, which is my top 10 ways to balance your life and boost your health and happiness. So if you'd like that, you can just go to my website and you'll see the little box there if you'd like to get that for yourself.
And you have a Facebook presence.
Oh, I sure do.
Find
my
you
favorite
there.
Place.
Excellent.
I love Facebook. My Facebook page is facebook.com/ Dr. Susan Biali, that's DrSusanBiali, and I have so much fun there. If you want to talk to me, ask me something, post something, that's probably the place where I'm more active than anywhere else. Actually, we met, I think, because you had read that mm-hmm. post of mine on the HSV introvert, right? But I know that we also connect through Facebook. I just love it.
Quick question. What's your opinion about things like Facebook and social media and how that has enhanced, I'm making an assumption because I think it has enhanced life for introverts and probably HSPs as well. Maybe what have you noticed about any of that for yourself?
I really think so, because it's not like we're not people. Every single human being, there's so much research about this. We need other people. If a child, a baby, doesn't have contact with other human beings, it's really quite devastating what happens. And so I think with the need to sometimes pull ourselves back or to retreat and hide away as HSP introverts, it can often feel a little lonely. And the ability to communicate with other people from the quiet of our own home and on our own terms, to be able to interact this way and think about things and process things, it's so rich and so safe and so much under our control when it comes to environment. So it's such a blessing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. it's
greatest thing since noise-canceling headphones.
Yes, exactly, that too. Well, thank you so much for a delightful conversation, Susan, and for giving us lots of affirmation and reminders about, being strong and accepting in who we are, and that as we do that, as you've shown us, the whole world opens up. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. This has been such a joy, and I really look forward to sharing it with all my people.
Thank you.
This is Beth Below, the Introvert Entrepreneur. I hope you enjoyed this podcast conversation with Dr. Susan Biali, author of Live a Life You Love, 7 Steps to a Healthier, Happier, More Passionate You. To be notified of future podcasts from the Introvert Entrepreneur, you can subscribe by email, RSS feed, or through iTunes. To find me on iTunes, just type in the word introvert in the search bar in the audio podcast section. If you enjoy these podcasts, I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and share these interviews with friends, family, and colleagues. You can also find out more about how to hire me for coaching, trainings, and speaking engagements, as well as read my blog at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And be sure to join us for more community and conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next time.